Kramer, I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Amen.
Since November 13th, 87, I haven't drank anything. And that's a miracle for a guy that couldn't not put something in his body to mess him up. And it's a pretty amazing thing. It's good to see so many people in here. I know a bunch of you in here. I've known a bunch of you for years, and it's good to see you. Made some new friends the last couple of days, and it's good to see y'all. I did a little workshop this afternoon, and some of y'all even came back tonight. That's a pretty cool thing. Y'all seen this coat? Now I can take it off. Okay, hey. This is a little hot. I'll be taking off a few more things before the night's over. I just need to tell you, a little warm up here. I know. He's my big beefy buddy. Stand up, buddy. Stand up. There's my good buddy right here. Look at this. Look at this. See how big he is? Let me see. If any of you want to give me a hard time tonight after I talk, I'm honored to be here. I need to thank Buffy for asking me to come. She arranged this quite nicely for me and gave me directions and the whole bit. I mean, it was blessed. She gave me plenty of notice. I speak a lot, and it's gotten to be a real hassle these days, especially since 9/11. Travel's a bear anywhere, and for anybody to give me some advance notice on these things, I love to try to do whatever I can do. If Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous ask me to speak, I mean, I'm usually there, but it's gotten to be quite difficult for me, and I stay pretty booked up, and I thank you for thinking ahead of time enough to ask. People are quite indignant. They call it, well, we're having a conference next weekend. Can you come talk? And then they get mad because you can't, you know, because we're booked up. And so, bless her for doing that. And Mike, my host, took us to dinner, tried to kill me tonight, and I don't know. I ate too much, as always. I don't seem to be able to stay away from the food, so what can I say? Thank you so much. Everybody that was in that countdown, all of you cats that were picking up, standing up with multiple years, I want to personally thank you from the very bottom of my heart at the very beginning of this talk for staying in this fellowship. Thank you for coming and getting sober and continuing to stay in the trenches and helping us help others get sober, truly. We had a lot of newcomers stand up. There was a lot of very young sobriety in this room, and I'm very grateful that you're here. I'm not one of those that believe that you're the most important person here. I'm the most important person here. But thanks. You're the lifeblood of AA. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we need the newcomers to have people, blah, 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 blah. But somebody's got to be around to carry the message. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1987, there was a bunch of old-timers there carrying the message to me. And if the old-timers hadn't been there, I'd have died. It's just as simple as that. I mean, this is how this message is transmitted from one alcoholic to another alcoholic. And that's exactly what we do in this fellowship. And so I think sometimes we trivialize our importance in this fellowship. I think we have people around our groups that, well, what can I do? I'm only one person. How can I help anybody else? That's not your problem to worry about that. Your problem is to show up and carry the message. Do what you're supposed to do. You know, it's like us worrying about making the fields grow. Your job is just to plow the dang thing. God will take care of the rain. God will take care of germinating the seed. You just plow the field and do what you're supposed to do. And that's exactly what I think, well, a lot of this talk is going to be about. A lot of my stuff, every time I speak, I think I need to give you about a 10-second disclaimer. I work at a treatment center. I do clerical work at a treatment center. I'm not here representing that treatment center. And I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous around the fellowship for about 20-some-odd years now, 23 years now. And I need to tell you that I'm 14 years sober. This will tell you kind of where I'm coming from. And I'm not representing Alcoholics Anonymous in any way. And this is not my 12-step work. I do this as an honor, an absolute honor to get to participate in this conference and spend some time with you guys and talking about the solution. But my 12-step work is the same thing as your 12-step work. When we sit down across the table from another alcoholic and open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and help him with the literature. That's my job. Same as it's your job. You follow what I'm saying? There are no gurus in this business here, folks. And some of you guys, you know, you want to put me up on this old pedestal, you know, so, oh, Chris Raymer, oh, Chris. You know, my abrasiveness has a tendency to crack certain alcoholics. You know, I have a tendency to be able to reach certain people that have a difficulty being reached. But I'm going to tell you something, folks. Everybody in here is supposed to reach somebody. And if you're not in the trenches helping, there's somebody going to die. And that's the bottom line. For every rough, tough buckaroo like me yelling at somebody, there needs to be some quiet, very gentle person over here. And that's how this all balances out. So I'm honored to know every one of you, and I know that God's going to use every single one of us in this fellowship. And if you don't think that's the truth, that's your stupid arrogance. There you go. I need to mention a couple of things real quick before I go in. I have a tendency to cuss sometimes. I'm going to try real hard not to do that. I did fairly well this afternoon, and I'll try to do that well tonight. I would like to do that. I believe that it is not a part of our fellowship to cuss, but I'm going to fail miserably at it anyway, so what the hell. I'm going to try to do the best I can do. I come at this thing with a certain amount of passion. Alcoholics Anonymous was the last house on the block for me. I got sober in AA. I didn't get sober in a treatment center. I went to treatment. I went to therapy. I did a lot of things. I sat in pyramid-shaped teepees and licked crystals, and I did a lot of things trying to get well. I've been roughed and poked and prodded, and I've had every... Colonics nearly worked. I need to tell you. I mean, it was certainly the closest thing I'd come to a spiritual experience in a long time. I need to tell you, I didn't get sober, but I felt rather clean after it was all said and done. So I did a lot of things to get sober, and that's some of the stuff I want to talk to you guys about. But eventually what happened was I ended up back in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I landed in a room full of people that loved me enough to finally tell me the truth. And that's what I want to talk to you about. I'm passionate about recovery, and I know a lot of people out there on the circuit that are equally as passionate about recovery. It's just that y'all got to see from the perspective that I came from. See, it's like I'm not talking from a bunch of book knowledge up here. I'm talking from some absolute experience. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to nearly die from alcoholism out there. When I got to this fellowship, I weighed about 40 pounds more than I weigh now, and I had kidney damage and liver damage It's still debatable about the brain damage, but there was a lot. I mean, I was a mess when I got here. My finances were in disarray, and I was living in a little apartment by myself because nobody wanted to be around me, and I was not a happy camper. I was taking about 7 pills a day just to stay alive, eating antidepressants like they were candy, just to try to keep level. Y'all follow what I'm saying? And suicide was a daily thought for me. And so I know what it's like to be out there hurting, wanting to get better. And then I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and things got worse. Because the one thing that was gonna make me feel okay, giving me a sense of ease and comfort, which was the alcohol and later the drugs, now you're telling me I can't have. And it's like, oh, this what a cool thing this is. You know, this is really great. One day at a time, I'm going to die. This is exactly what I'm going to do. And I tried to get sober. I was up in North Texas, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this, but I need to get this out of the way right off the bat so that I can relax a little bit, because some of the stuff I talk about is a little controversial. As anybody that ever introduces me, oh, Chris, you know, people come up after the workshop, boy, you pissed him off this afternoon. You know, nothing I say can make you, can do that. I mean, I don't have the power to make you angry. If it doesn't, if what I say doesn't jive with what you believe, then you let it go in one ear and out the other. That's what I have to do when I sit in a meeting with you and listen to you tell your stupid war stories. And right, I mean, I have to just let it go in one ear and out the other. You can do the same thing here. And then next week, when it's your nickel, dig, and your turn to come up here, you can tell how God saved you one day at a time. And everybody will applaud, and then we can go on about our way. Y'all with me? Y'all understand? You don't have to agree with me. This is my story. Maybe not be your story. But I tell you, I think a bunch of you can identify with what I'm fixing to say. Only thing I'm going to say controversial tonight is this. Two things. I don't think meetings are a place to share your stupid war stories, because the book says it's exactly opposite. Meetings are a place to share your experience, strength, and hope. And I don't think meetings are a place to share your stupid, pathetic problems, because the book says exactly opposite. We're supposed to be sharing hope with a newcomer. So, I get to speak a lot. I'm fortunate to get to do it. I hate to do this. It's torture for me. I was with Patty earlier, and it's like she says, "What's wrong?" You know, it's anybody that's around me. Mike could say it eventually. You seem so. I hate to do this because I'm as shy as can be. Y'all see me out there. I don't have anything to say. I don't know what to do. I'm self-conscious. I'm always checking my zipper. I'm always checking my pants to make sure. I don't like to do this. It's too public for me. And about 5 minutes after this is over, I'll be away from everybody, and I'll relax, and everything will be cool. Somebody else will call and ask me to speak, and I guess I'll go do it. You know, it's when no matter where I'm at, I talk about basically the same thing, those two things I just talked about. Why? Because it almost cost me my life in this fellowship, because I couldn't stay in these rooms and listen to this crap. And so I'm talking to this, and everybody's laughing, and everybody's clapping their hands, and says, yeah, right on, Chris, right on, brother. Tell it like it is. You know, yeah, we agree. And then they look around like blink, like deer, like, oh. And then they go straight back into their meetings, and they do it again. It's like, so I don't think for a second that I think what I'm going to do here is try to talk you into believing the way I believe. I'm just like, this is my experience. My experience is working at a treatment center for the last 9 years and watching thousands, guys, our hospital will treat about 1,000 people a year, watching thousands of people come through that hospital having the same kind of experience I had. The problem, see, has never been to get alcoholics to AA. We've done some great PR work out there. We've got some great word of mouth because it's the only game in town that works. Alcoholics Anonymous is what sobered up drunks out there. Can y'all get down with that? And our sister fellowships in Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, they're having the same kind of luck. It's the only game in town that's working. And so we don't have any problem getting people to come to our fellowship. But once we get them here, the job becomes a little dicey, because what we have to do is figure out how to keep them here. Relapses are rampant. Our success rates suck. They're terrible. And everybody, I think, needs to take a piece of the responsibility for this. I mean, it's easy to look around and point at some old coot back in the back and say, well, it's his fault or it's their fault. It's different. No, I tell you what the problem is. The problem is our formats. Our meeting formats have gotten just knocked in the dirt because nobody wants to change anything. See? Well, our traditions back up here tell us that each group's autonomous, and if something's not working in your group and you can't keep members there, change it. You follow what I'm saying? We got groups in Austin, Texas right now. We've got a buddy of mine that's on the steering committee that went in there, and there's this huge group that had dozens of meetings a week, and they were all open discussion meetings. And he went in one business meeting, went and got nearly half of the meetings changed to literature-based meetings, where we're going to talk about God and the steps. How cool is that? One little buckaroo drunk, sober a few years, went into the steering committee meeting of one of the largest groups there in Austin and instituted a bunch of change. But everybody wants to look around and wait for somebody else to do it. I'm asking the patients as they come to our hospital, buddy, how come you didn't stay in AA? I mean, it shows right here you were in AA for years. You know, then how come you didn't stay? Every one of them said the same thing. I've talked about this for years from the podium, folks. There's nothing. Everybody says the same thing. I cannot stand the stupid war stories. And when we finish with your war stories, we're going to go to your stupid problems. And you see how this makes you uncomfortable? I'm not speaking from any spiritual mountaintop. How many times have I walked into a meeting and early sobriety says, God, I'm just having a bad day. I just need to share with you a few minutes. How many times have I done it? A gazillion? But I'm just saying it's not right. Early gays didn't do that. Early cats in Alcoholics Anonymous didn't do that. There's a line in the book that says we're going to set aside one night a week so the newcomer can come with their problems. I think that's a great idea. Let's do that. Let's make Thursday night a night to piss and moan. And you can come to the meeting and everybody can just complain about what's going on. And then Friday, we can come back and start talking about the power of God. We can start coming back and talking about the spiritual experience. See? Because that's what we need to do. 14 years ago, as a result of a bunch of people telling me what to do, not suggesting anything, telling me what to do, I had a thing called a spiritual experience, and the desire to drink left and hadn't returned since. Haven't had to do any cocaine, haven't had to drink any alcohol, hadn't had to do anything stupid along those lines. And I got to tell you, I got a blessed life today. That's where my passion comes from. I want you to have the same thing in my life. And yet everybody wants to let everybody off the hook. Well, you'll see it tonight. They'll come up after the meeting, and about half of them will come through and shake hands and thank you and blah, 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 and bless you and hug necks, and a few of you will wait back in the back. And well, I got to go do it. Sooner or later, I just got to go do it. You know, I got to walk through you. You know, I got to go straight, and you'll be waiting. Chris, I thought, thanks for coming to share tonight, but I'd just like to take exception with some things you said every time I've ever spoke. Oh, great. What piece did you not like? Well, after all, I mean, we're not all going to be happy, joyous, and free. Oh, I see. I see, Mr. Sanctimonious, I know it all. Okay, I see. Mr. I'm God, and I think I know what everybody's going to... Oh, I understand. Why not? See, because my book says we promise us to be happy, joyous, and free. My book says you're going to get connected to some more power than you've ever been connected to in your life. Power, guys, lack of power is the dilemma, it says on page 45. How are you going to get some power? Well, you're going to work the steps. And then when you get connected to this power, you'll not only have power enough to deal with the alcoholism and drug addiction piece, that stuff, but you'll also have some power to deal with, how about relationships? How about money? Yeah, how about the creative life? How about a bunch of the cool stuff out there that we were promised that we could do? Dig? And see, that's all that this program was about. This program was about getting you people connected to power. But that's not what I was told when I got to this fellowship. And this is what everybody wants to take exception with. You want to make sure that everybody understands it's your God-given right to come into my meetings and dump anything on the table that you want to dump. Well, it's not. If you want to do it, do it. But don't disguise it and think it's right, because it's not. Look at the archives, talk to the old-timers, read the literature. It tells you exactly what to do. When are we supposed to share war stories, folks? We talked about it in today's little workshop. When are we supposed to share war stories? Only time. Bill Wilson sitting in his little apartment, right, and there's a little guy named Ebby comes and sees him, right? The little Ebby buddy, and he comes up, and what do? Ebby shares a few war stories with Bill Wilson, and he gets his little confidence, and then Ebby and Bill, right? And then Ebby sets the hook and tells him about finding God. And Bill Wilson does the same thing with Dr. Bob. They share a few war stories. Y'all know the story. He share a few war stories. Dr. Bob gets comfortable. He says, boy, this guy really knows his stuff. And then what does Bill do? He sets the hook. He talks about God and the steps. Dig? What did they do with alcoholic number 3, 4, 5? Read the archives. Look at the stuff. Same thing. But see, guys, what we do is that we do it every meeting. A newcomer comes in, and all he's going to hear is the war stories. And it's cool if he can identify, but what happens if he can't identify? I've told this 1,000 times. I look at Debbie right here, and she's a businesswoman, and she's a professional woman. And I'm going to come into this meeting, right? And we're all sitting down at this table, and I'm going to tell her, in 1976, I crawled in dumpsters in Houston, Texas to get my dinner. Now, there's a couple of you that have crawled in dumpsters to get your dinner, and you could identify with that story. But what about poor Debbie here? She can't identify with that. If I was talking about the disease of alcoholism, the physical allergy, the mental obsession, and especially the spiritual malady, she could identify. But we're not going to get time to talk about that because we're too busy telling our dumpster stories. That's why she can't stay in the meeting. Isn't that right? We got to stop. Use your brains, folks. Why would you walk up to a professional and start telling them your stupid, scary stories? That's why we don't keep the young adults in our meetings. Because you think that's all you have is your story. I'm not talking about from the podium. Tonight, from the podium, I'm going to share some more stories with you. Dick shared some stories. Marianne shared some stories. That's what we're supposed to do from the podium. But I'm talking about in the Friday night discussion meeting, why don't you talk about God and the steps and help somebody have a better day? Instead of trying to scare them into sobriety. Last time I looked, there was no chapter in the back of the book called Into Scare. There is a chapter called Into Action, which happens to be the theme of this conference. Into Action, what a great topic. 1980. Let me tell you real quick, I'm in the food business. Can you pour me another Zima right here, please? Thanks. Just kidding. I'm going to try some of that, too, in my next relapse. I'm going to try some of that. They didn't have that when I got sober. I know. Thanks. I was in the food business for years, and I grew up in the hill country down close to where Marianne lives, and I was raised around Kerrville, and I went to high school down there, and we started drinking. The year that Bill Wilson died, the year and the month to the date, January 1971, he passed away, Bill Wilson, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the month that I started drinking. How apropos, you know? And it's an amazing thing. I put alcohol in my body. It was a Boone's Farm apple wine. Some of y'all familiar with that? Yeah, little brother back there. Yeah, yeah, you like the... Do they still make that stuff? They still make that stuff? I think they manufacture it over here at Dow, I think is where they manufacture it. I think I saw the big plant over there was at Dow. Guys, any of you haven't drank it, it's as nasty as tasting stuff. It's like drinking hummingbird juice. It's just real sweet. Just sugar. It's like sugar with a kick. And so I'm drinking this Boone's Farm apple wine. I told her I was drinking with this old guy, and he said he took a swig and I took a swig and we spit it out. And I said, "Boy, that's terrible." And Edward looked at me and said, "Boy, that's terrible." And he looked at me for a few seconds, and I took another swig and held it down, and I handed the bottle to him, and he said, "Like this." He said, "No, that tastes like, I'm not touching it." And he's walking back across the field. It's like 10 o'clock at night. He's walking back across the field, and I said, "What, buddy, does that mean you don't want any more of this? Is that what you're saying?" Because it's already hit my bloodstream, and I finished the bottle. See? Given sufficient reason, it tastes like crap. Can you stay away from it? Not me. Because when I put it in my body, it tasted bad, guys, and I didn't enjoy the drinking a bit, but I enjoyed the way it made me feel. Dig? That's what separates us, guys. There's people in this room that are not alcoholic and addict, and they cannot understand what I'm saying. And there's people in this room that are alcoholic that understand exactly what I'm saying. I'm not drinking the stuff because I like that taste. I'm drinking it because I like the way it makes me feel. You with us? It's bottom line. I didn't do the same stupid stuff for 18 years, folks. What did I do after I crawled out of those dumpsters in Houston, Texas? I looked at myself in the mirror with tears in my eyes and said, "I'm never going to do that again." How humiliating was that? I did it again. I caught myself a couple of weeks later, low on funds, with enough for liquor, but not enough for food. So I start compromising myself, and I did it for 18 years. And everybody in this room has done it. You stayed with people that you hated, didn't you? You stayed in relationships longer than you needed to, based on, yes, yes. You stayed in jobs that you hated, yes. We still do it today, guys. We continue to put ourselves in situations so that we can feel okay inside. And that's what alcoholism and drug addiction is about. And that's what we have to see, clearly. It's got nothing to do with the drama on the outside of your life. See, I look at life like this, guys. I look at life not the way it is. I look at life the way I am inside. Can y'all get down with that? I can look at this row right here, and all of you, and I can ask you how you see me right now, right? A few of you say, "Crazy son of a bitch." I'm down with that, okay? And then some, but it depend on what your perception of me is going to be different than the person sitting next to you, because you're different inside. You follow what I'm saying? And so what we need to understand is that's what life is all about. Our job is to try to change your insides, not change your outside. Can y'all get down? Let me give you another example. I've used this 1,000 times. How many of you guys ever walked in Walmart and been a little spiritually bankrupt? Which means you're grinding your teeth. You push, you get your bag, you can't get it out, you push the cart, you're pushing it, and there's a nice little lady in front of you, she's moving a little too slow, and you're thinking, "If I had a gun." And you want to get ramming speed, dun 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 dun, because you know, the kids are screaming and they're driving you nuts, and, "Hey, can't you control this? What do you do? And you're just, some little guy's having trouble getting something off the top shelf, and you just storm, just shoot by him. You ain't going to help. Scream, he'll help himself. You know, it's like you just go, okay, and then the next day you go back in there, and it's like a little different. You know, you saw something nice in the parking lot, and you picked up the trash, and you pushed it away, and you walked in and everything, you know, the birds tweeping, you know, it's like, everything's good. Y'all know what I mean? And it's like somebody's having a problem over here, and you help them, you pat the little, they're just at the most charming age at this, you know, and they're just talking and visiting. That's the difference. What changed? Walmart didn't change, did it? You changed. The internal condition changed. Isn't that right? It's always inside that counts, folks. I just set the trap. Everybody agree? Yes, Chris. We agree. Okay. Then why is it that we have to do in our meetings this junior therapy session every time we come to a meeting? Trying to figure out what's wrong with your outside so that we can change that so you can be okay inside. I cannot tell you how many times cats come to treatment and the first thing they want to do is tell us why they got drunk. "Well, I got drunk because I went back to that woman. I got drunk because I didn't go back to that woman." Dig? "I got drunk because I made too much money." We had a guy, we just won the lottery there a few months ago. He got drunk, he got loaded again after a period of sobriety because he won the lottery. Right across the aisle is a lady. They got drunk because she didn't have enough money to pay the bills. Well, let's see. He had too much money. He didn't have enough money at all. This guy's in a great relationship. Everything got too good. I just sabotaged myself. Fear of success. That's so much horse crap. That's not even funny. That is absolute horse crap. And we sit in our meetings and that's all we want to talk about. That's all we want to talk about. Who's got the problem of the day? Here's what you say. And the old timers, the young and dusty, I've heard it 1,000 times. Well, you know what happens if you come in this meeting with a problem and you leave, you're going to leave with the same problem if you don't talk about it. What are we telling the newcomer? We're telling the newcomer that if they manage well and cannot have any problems, they'll stay sober. That's a crying shame, folks. Because let me tell you something. Life ain't going to do you great every day. And this belief that everything, if everything's good, I can stay sober. And if everything's bad, I'll get drunk. Isn't that right? Isn't that what the treatment centers have been doing for years with us? They don't want you to go near anything that would cause you to think about drinking because you might do it. Let me tell you what my book says. My book says that we've lost the ability to choose whether we're going to do this or not. My book says that I won't have the ability to remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago, much less remember your stupid war stories. You follow what I'm saying? That's why people get DWIs and then go get another one. That's why Child Protective Services is called to pick up your kids and you dodge that bullet and then you go drink again. You're not choosing to do that. I hear people from the podium all the time, thanks to God I got up this morning and chose not to drink. You better reread this book, because my book says you have lost the ability to choose whether you're going to do it or not. If you could choose not to do it, just go do it. Guys, I can choose not to do it today. I've proved 1,000 times I can choose not to do it for several months. And then there comes the day when I get caught in what the book calls a mental blank spot and just pick up. Because I never recovered. I never recovered from alcoholism. All I did was screw up everything I had and push it all together and say, today I'm not going to drink. And just out of just sheer anger sometimes, just I'll show you, I've stayed sober for periods of time. Always, always followed by relapse. You with us? Okay, here we go, because I'm not going to keep you for very long. So I went back into meetings after relapse, and everybody wants to pinch my little cheek and tell me to keep coming back and everything will be okay. And then we go talk about the problem some more, share a few more war stories, and then we wonder why we can't stay sober. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Success rates in 1940 were 75, nearly 100% in parts of the country. Success rates right now in the United States, best case scenario is 20%. It took us 67 years to take a perfectly wonderful program like Alcoholics Anonymous and drop it in the toilet. Why? Because everybody's got their own little idea about what causes an alcoholic to drink. Alcoholism is a disease, folks. You drink because genetically you're wired that way. Ain't that right? Period. That's what the book says. That's what the literature says. That's what all of our advanced knowledge today points to. Genetics. Genetics. I got an identical twin brother that's just like me, folks. He's an alcoholic just like me. No, he doesn't wear a patch on the other eye. You know, I can hear it every time I can hear it. No, I got a little sister that's 1 year and 3 months younger than me, never had a problem at all. See? But what we did for years, what I did was, for years, my father was an alcoholic and he passed on the genetic predisposition. My mom's, she drinks tonight. She had one glass of wine tonight. We talked about it this afternoon. She drinks one glass. Unless she decides she doesn't want it, then she doesn't drink it. No big deal. I've watched her leave alcohol one Christmas, my brother-in-law, he's got a little money, and he bought her, Mom drinks Gallo, screw cap, you know, gun, big gallon, you know, it's good stuff. Get you, okay. But my buddy, my nephew, not my brother-in-law, it was my nephew, bought her this high-dollar bottle of vino for Christmas, and it was a champagne stuff, and she opened it up for Christmas, and she poured it, made mimosas for everybody. Isn't that what they call it, the orange juice? Isn't that right, Pat? Okay, made mimosas, and I watched Laura, she poured it, drank, sipped it, grit teeth, you know, set it down, and I said, Lois, good stuff, huh? She says, nah, it just tastes a bit off. You know, it's like, we left... Off? It's off because you poured orange juice in it, is why it's off. But you're still going to drink it. Yeah, she says, what do you mean? She looked at me like I was crazy. Of course not. Given sufficient reason, it tastes a little bad. Huh? Can you leave it alone? Come on, guys. How many of you guys at the end of a party, oh, geez, we're out of beer. Take all the beer, pour it into a bucket, strain it through a pair of pantyhose, and get... Now, depending on the pantyhose, no, come on, are we going to do this because it makes a great taste? No, because we're trying, guys, I'm not addicted to Lone Star beer. I'm addicted to the alcohol that's in the Lone Star beer. Do you care? You see, I don't care what it tastes like. I don't care if it's hot or cold or what color it is. If it makes me feel okay inside, I'm going to drink it. Yes? Okay. There was this frog down in Florida, right, that's almost extinct now because they put it on this television, this Discovery Channel, about this deal, because you could lick this frog and get high. You follow what I'm saying? And so everybody down in this swamp, they were flooded with people down in there licking these frogs. And I'm sitting there laughing and says, yeah, where can I get some of those frogs? This is good stuff. You see, but I'm sitting there watching television with some normal people, and they're looking around like, why would anybody? I mean, could you just see the frog licking his little arm up and licking his little arm up? Like, why would anybody lick a frog's butt? I mean, what? Because there's a payoff for licking that frog. Big, there's a payoff for licking that. Book says I got a disease. The book says I got a disease because spiritually inside I'm bankrupt. Now, this is the payoff. Whether you're licking a frog or you're drinking the wine, whatever you're doing, putting in your body, right? The payoff is it treats this internal condition called the spiritual malady. And that's why I do it. The big book uses this. Big book describes the spiritual malady as this. Guys, irritable, restless, and discontent. All you alcoholics in here, can you identify with irritable, restless, and discontent? And guys, it don't have nothing to do with how much money you got or a fine woman. I've sat in a house, a $500,000 house with a fine-looking woman. Y'all with me? Brand new sports car in the parking lot. Irritable, restless, and discontent. It ain't nothing to do with my external world. It's all internal. Yes? Yeah. Boredom. Symptom of the spiritual malady. How about depression? Anxiety. No sense of direction. Trouble in personal relationships. On page 52 it talks about trouble making a living. Got nothing to do with making money. What are you doing with that money? Huh? Yeah. Your credit cards are maxed out. You're bouncing checks. You make $1 million, but you can't manage the money. What's up with this? This is a spiritual malady. And this is why we drink. This is why we drink. Because when I put that stuff in my body, it fixes instantly what's wrong with me. You can't live in that condition. So you come to meetings. Big, we take the booze away from you. We dry you out. Physically, there's nothing to trigger you. Now what are you going to do? Now you're going to sit here and grind your teeth until the pain of staying sober gradually outweighs the benefits, and then you're going to go pick a fight with your girlfriend, if you're like me, right? Look for some excuse to go get drunk so you can feel comfortable inside. See, guys, the alcohol and drugs is not the problem. Alcohol is not Chris Raymer's problem. Alcohol is Chris Raymer's solution. Now, you got to treat this internal condition, how you treat it. We understood, Bill Wilson understood, and 67 years ago they understood, God's going to treat it. Booze will treat it, or God will treat it. Booze stopped working, let's try God. Clear, undiluted message. But I tell you guys, there's parts of this country, you can sit in meetings for 6 months and never hear it. You can sit in meetings for 6 months and never hear anybody say that you can recover from alcoholism and drug addiction. We'll always be recovering. That's not what my book says. My book says that the desire to drink will be lifted from me. See, here's the cul-de-sac that paints us in. If I'm always sick, then what you're telling me is, today I can stay sober because things are going good, but what happens when Patty breaks up with me next week? I'll kill her after that. No, what happens after that? No, what happens when the money goes away? What happens when Mom gets sick? See, what happens when life throws me some curves and then I can't stay sober? See, when I'm recovered, if things are going great, I can have the power to stay sober. And when things are going bad, I still have the power to stay sober because I don't want to drink. And for you newcomers in here, you people with a few days of sobriety and a few weeks of sobriety, let me tell you, that's what we're going for. We're going for the time when you don't want to even touch alcohol or drugs. You don't want to use it. And that's what recovery is. 14 years, let me tell you what happened. In 1980, I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting up in North Texas trying to save a marriage, and it didn't work. I walked into the meetings and listened to your stuff and said, man, I'm not near as bad as you guys. I got me a few more years of drinking left in me before I get as bad as you losers, dig? And I turned around and walked out, turned around and walked back in, dig? I'm away for a few weeks and come back because there's no other hope for me. I've been doing therapy for years, guys, with the belief that If I can finally get all my little ducks in a row, everything's going to be okay. And I'm going to tell you right now, guys, I know there's a bunch of you in here that are in therapy right now. Thank you for going to therapy. Thank you for staying in therapy. It's a good thing. You're just have a nice life. You know, this is the best. Truly. If you can't afford therapy, I'll let you know some people that can help you. Therapy won't fix your drinking. Because my drinking is not caused by external circumstances. There's a difference between alcohol abuse and alcoholism. And the disease is caused by spiritual in nature. It's genetic. And no outside situation can change that. God, I'll never go to that. God, if I could just get that blonde to go out with me, she'd go out with me. I'd steady be drinking. God, if I could just get that brunette to go out with me, just steady be drinking. God, if I could just get the redhead to go out with me, she'd go out with me. God, if I could just get all three of them at the same time to go out with me, I would. But I sit in my meetings and I listen to you people, and that's exactly what you want to do. If I can just get married, everything will be okay. If we can just graduate, everything will be okay. If we can just get the kids, I'll be okay. Now, it's later the other day, not a week ago. If I can just find my real adopted parents, everything will be okay. Buddy, you're going to be blessed by that, but you won't stop drinking because that's not what it's about. That's what you want to blame it on. That's not what it's about. And if you believe it is, you're never going to get sober because you'll never, ever, ever get your life perfect. When you get all the good stuff, you're still going to want something else because you're irritable, restless, and discontent. Does that make sense? I think it makes a lot of sense. 83, first wife leaves. 85, first DWI. 86, I'm working for my brother because I can't cook anymore. I can't hold a knife. It's nasty stuff. 87, I drive home to my little apartment up there in Lewisville, Texas, and particularly long day at work, hungover. Stop at the store, buy my obligatory 12-pack of beer, open the mailbox, return checks. I know those envelopes anywhere. You know the ones? They put them all in individual sealed envelopes so that you get the privilege of opening every single one of them that you've burnt, you know, and finding out. Yeah. And I'm looking at this stack of return checks, and I'm looking at myself in the mirror, and I'm dying, and I hate my life. Just like Marion talked about this morning, just like Dick talked about last night, I hate who I've become. This is not who Dad raised. This is not. The depression's killing me, folks. I'm too afraid to go to the store to buy food, and I'm slowly starving to death. And I need to tell you, I know this is an AA meeting, but drugs figure in there. I'm doing a bunch of cocaine, and the paranoia is killing me. And I took a bottle of pills. And I called my little niece, and I said goodbye in a roundabout way. Didn't say I'm killing myself. I just told her I wasn't going to be around for Christmas. I loved her. Still do to this day. And I sat down and drank a bottle of booze. Finished this job. And about halfway through, I'm starting to feel this stuff creep in. And I hear this voice say, Chris, don't do it. I told it 1,000 times, guys. I don't know what I heard. It might have been the guy's vacuum cleaner next door. I don't have a clue. I'm not here to question it. I heard, Chris, don't do it. Go back to AA. And I'm sitting there arguing with this voice. I ain't going back to AA. You can take Alcoholics Anonymous and shove it. Because if I have to go back in those rooms again and listen to one more person whine about their stupid day, I'd just as soon be dead. Now that's where our fellowship has gotten. Guys, that's my nickel and that's my truth. That's my story. Selfish and self-centered people that thought that they could come into meetings and share anything they wanted almost killed me. It says on page 62, we're the most selfish, self-centered people on earth. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problems. I'd like to help the newcomer, but I'm too busy trying to fix me. Unbelievable. I boarded the tent that night. The next morning I got up and had to go back into work. Didn't last most of the day, but I was there the better part. At 6 o'clock, I walked into the back door of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'd never been to this meeting before. It was downtown Lewisville, Texas. And I walked in the back door. I could hear them laughing. By the time I'm coming from my car, and I'm walking back up to the door, and I can hear them laughing inside. And they're smoking cigarettes. It's one of those rooms you open it up, a long shotgun room, and the smoke billows out. You know, and you like look down underneath like, what the hell? And I walk in, and everybody's got big books, and everybody's laughing, having a good time. And they see, everybody turns at the same time, and sees me, right? And they're laughing, and I stand up for a few minutes and start to back out. I got 1 foot cocked in the back and just start to back out. Now, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt, guys. About 20 hours ago, I was trying to commit suicide. And now I'm in this meeting, and I know it's the one place I need to be, but I cannot stand you. I can't stand. I hate myself so bad. I feel so self-conscious anyway. And now I'm in there, and you're laughing like this. And I know you're laughing at me. And I start to step back, and I step on the foot of this 19-year-old girl. And she says, "Watch it, buddy." And she hooked her finger in my belt loop, and she said, "Sit down, cowboy." I got to tell you, I'm as far from a cowboy as you could possibly be. I need to tell you that. And she said, "Sit down." I got a big old chaw dip in my mouth. That's as close as I come. And she set me down, and she got me a cup of coffee, and she asked me my name. I learned later that her sponsor was over there giving her this, telling her what to do, because her sponsor couldn't get over there to me in time. She could see me backing out, and she told the girl to get him. Now listen, let me tell you something, guys. You think I'm rough looking now. You should have seen me 14 years ago. And for this little 19-year-old girl to come up next to me and touch me. No, really. To put her finger in my belt loop and sit me down. And I stunk like hell and I haven't had a bath. And my hat's off to her. And I sat down there and the chairperson, you know, got a newcomer. Although he's not a newcomer, because they've seen me up in North Texas for years, and they knew who I was. And he said, "Chris is here, and we're going to go around the room." And I knew it. I said, I'm grinding my teeth. I looked over at the girl. I looked at her, and I said, I can't stand this. I know exactly what they're going to do. They're going to all go around, and they're going to tell me how they got here. They're going to tell me every stupid war story again. I'm here. You don't need to entice me to come. What you need to do, I'll say it again, is entice me to stay. They tricked me. The chairperson said, "We're going to go around the room, and those that care to share, we'd like you to share a piece of your spiritual experience." That separated the room pretty quick. And the people that had a spiritual experience and had recovered from alcoholism and weren't drinking, shared their story with me. They didn't share one war story. They didn't tell me any of their drama. They told me how their life was better today as a result of working the steps. Every single one of them, bullets, a couple of minutes apiece, short attention span, no long-winded drug-out drama, bullets. Got my wife back, got through the legal problems, got the IRS paid off, better health, overcame this, overcame that. And I'm telling you, folks, by the time the room's halfway around, I'm crying. Because those people were doing exactly what the book told them to do. They were pulling me with a vision of how cool life could be on a spiritual path. That meeting that night was not a junior therapy session. That meeting that night was not a war story central. That meeting that night was a pep rally for God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if it had been anything different, I'd have died. I sat right there and couldn't believe it. And they asked me that night, I said, "Chris, are you ready to get sober for good and for all?" And I said, well, one day at a time. I've been around the fellowship long enough to be dangerous, folks. And I'm going to tell you again, one day at a time, I'm down with it, folks. But that's not what the book asked. The book asked us to ask the newcomer if they're finished. Are you ready to get sober? You want to change life? Guys, I don't want this one day at a time. I want this for keeps. Can you give me a little more hope than today? Because that's what the book says. You read Dr. Bob's story closely, and you'll see exactly how they worked with a newcomer. And that's exactly what they did. And that's what they asked me. I said, one day at a time, they all got their coffee like this. They hooked their cups, and they all walked off. I said, "Buddy, wait, what? Come back." And they said, "No, buddy, we don't have time to mess with you. You want to give us some little one-liners? You want to joke about this? We ask you a simple question. Are you done? Because we're tired of babysitting you. We love you. You're welcome. But we're tired of babysitting you. We need your help in the trenches with us." I said, "I'm ready." I was sick, detoxing, the next morning, not the next day, after, the next morning, right there with me, they take me back to the club, a couple of the old-timers explained the third step prayer, talked about, here, made a decision, talked about making the decision to let God run the show, did it, gave me some information on the fourth step, 2 weeks later, I've got a finished fourth step, ready to go, dig. My sponsor sitting there with a big grin on his face, you know the kind, because they know. And I said, "Buddy, you ain't going to believe what I'm seeing in this four-step. I've been around the fellowship for 7 years and never done a four-step. Why? Because everybody let me off the hook. All right, don't worry, but don't rush into anything. Take your time to work the steps. Let me say this in case I forget. If anybody out here is telling the newcomer to take their time to work the steps, quit. Stop. Just because you have the ability to stay sober that way doesn't mean that the newcomer will. Stop. You're sharing your opinions about something you know nothing about. Quit. My book says just the opposite. My book says we seek the solution with the desperation of a drowning man. Isn't that right? That's been my experience. 2 weeks into the fellowship, I got a completed four-step, and I'm laughing because I'm starting to see the truth about myself. I'm starting to see that I'm not a victim. I've been a volunteer all my life. And I'm starting to see some miracles, and I'm starting to get free of the stuff that's been binding me, the stuff that's been keeping me drunk. I'm starting to get free from that stuff. And my sponsor's grinning, and I hugged him out in the parking lot, and he said, let's go dump this fifth step this weekend. And I'm down with it. And I drove home that night up in North Texas. I've told this story 1,000,000,000 times. And I drove up to North Texas, up at my little parking lot, the apartment complex where I tried to commit suicide 2 weeks before. And I got out of my old beat-up truck, leaning on one side, you know, the same old $500 is what I paid for the truck. That ought to tell you what kind of pickup truck it was. Riding around in Mike's big diesel today, you know, thinking, boy, this is tall damn cotton here. You know, this is great. No, shit, drive around again. Just one more time around the parking lot. Just roll the window down, waving, hey, buddy, you losers! You know, I came to this fellowship in a $500 pickup, you know, and I got out of that truck and slammed the door like that, and I'm sitting there like this, and buddy, I'm telling you, not a breath of fresh air out there. It was just cold North Texas air. Y'all follow me? Big full moon like we had last night, and I got out, it was about, just the sun was just going down. It was November. It was dark outside, and I sat in the back end of my truck and cried like a baby. Listen, guys, I'm surrounded by alcohol. There's a 7-Eleven on this corner, there's a Stop and Go, and there's a Circle K. And there's a liquor store. I could throw a big book and hit the liquor store from where my apartment is, right there. There's a grocery store behind me that sells liquor. You with me? There's a restaurant that I've got a tab in. And my cocaine dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live. It's Friday. I've been paid. I got a pocket full of money. And I don't want to use. I'm going to speak in tongues before this is over. It will not be a pretty sight. Listen, let me gain my composure. Guys, you've got to get it. You people in here, you new people in here, you old people in here, you've got to get it. This is the most powerful thing that I could explain to you. And you're not grasping it. My name is Chris Raymer, and I'm a real alcoholic. That means I cannot not drink. Given sufficient reason, court case, girlfriend leaving, parents freaked out, compromised health, I can stop for short periods of time and then I go back and do it again and again and again, and I know it's killing me and I cannot not drink. And 2 weeks after I walked into that room, a room full of people that loved me enough to tell me the truth, loved me enough, they didn't give a rat's butt how they put it. They just said, Chris, this is what you got to do in order to get sober. You don't want to do it? Go drink. You don't like it? Tough. But this is what we had to do to get sober. This is what you're going to have to do to get sober. They didn't try to candy coat it any way at all. And I did it. And I did it. I followed some directions for the first time in my life. I ground my teeth and shook my head and said, this God stuff won't work. And they said, Chris, we don't care if you believe it or not. Just do it. And I did it. And I had a spiritual experience. And that was 14 years ago. And the desire to drink has never, not ever returned. I'm going to tell you this and get out of here. I got one more little thing to say. My 14 years have been absolutely blessed. But I'm going to tell you, there was some financial problem in my third year that could eat you. You follow me? I owe the IRS $1,000,000,000,000. And I'm going to tell you, it took me forever to get those buckaroos paid off. But I'm going to tell you, making the amends, doing what I was supposed to do, I finally got that paid off. But the financial duress around that caused me a lot of difficulties. The whole time, I didn't want to drink. And I got to be there when my father died. And I wanted to die. I did not want to take a drink. You got to hear me. I didn't say I knew I was going to drink and kept myself from it. I did not want to drink because the book had said exactly what would happen, happened. I was placed in a position of neutrality. I had a wife for 9 years in sobriety, and it became quite apparent about 5 years ago that this was heading nowhere and I was in trouble. And I did lots of therapy and talked to lots of people in the program, and last year we divorced. And I'm quite grateful for that. Thanks for the freedom. There was a 9-year-old, there was a little stepson, he's 14 now, involved. And there was times this last year involved with a stepson and the confusion around this divorce that I just really would have rather jumped off a bridge than to deal with the stuff that I had to go through. I love that kid, and he's the only kid I'll ever have. And I didn't have to drink. I didn't want to drink because I've been placed in a position of neutrality. You'll either get well or you won't. Period. You work the steps, you're guaranteed to get well. You're guaranteed to have the spiritual experience. The desire to drink will leave you. Or you'll continue to fight this on a daily basis and end up succumbing to it. Look at the chip countdown, folks. We had a bunch of you pick up monthly chips. A bunch of you picked up weekly chip, right? A bunch of you just brand new sobriety. One nice person with 30, 34, forget what it was. We had a few 20s. Thank God you're here. You follow me? So few of you left. Where are they? Bored sitting at home? They're dead. They're gone. They're drunk. Because we've taken the simple message and we've turned it into some kind of self-help program. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. It's a spiritual program. I don't care what Hazelton says. We had AA a long time before that. Dig? Spiritual program whereby we get connected. Let me say this and get out of here. Anybody see my glasses? I wish we had a little longer. There's a couple things I wanted to talk about, but we'll do it another time. We'll sit in here and expire if we're not careful. I got this through the internet several months ago, and I've talked to some of you about it because it kind of scares the bejesus out of me. There's a court case winding its way through the United States Court of Appeals in New York, and this little court case involves a buckaroo that was sentenced to jail, was sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous through the court system. You follow me? On appeals, this cat is appealing this because what it says is that the state can't send you to some place that has to do with God. We're back to this. Remember we had the deal coming across the news all the time of people up in arms about the saying God in the schools and the Lord's Prayer and all this other stuff? Well, this is the same slippery slope that we're on with that, we're on here. And this is what the Court of Appeals is trying to get accomplished is, if this thing passes, gets through the courts, here's what's going to happen. Any treatment center that's out there that talks about God in the steps, in other words, if it's a treatment center that's accepting any federal money or state money, they can't talk about God. Means we can do a lot of therapy, we can do a lot of medicine stuff, but we can't talk about the 12 steps. So if you're in a state-funded facility, you're not going to be able to get it. Dig? Guys, and this could very well happen. This could very well happen. Okay, I'm not trying to say this to scare anybody. I'm just trying to say, where do you think, then, these drunks are going to come for their guidance? When they leave these state-funded facilities, and they didn't hear about God or the steps, and they've got all on with a lot of knowledge about themselves, they're going to come back out. Where are they going to get the information that they need to stay well? Thank you, sir. Right here. In your meetings, in your home groups. And that's why I'm asking you tonight. You guys in this room, ladies, gentlemen, young adults, please, all of us, let's take a stand. And let's understand the old timers gave us this fellowship, and we've taken it. Now we have this legacy to hold on to intact the way it was supposed to be, or we're not. But this is going to be the last house on the block for a lot of people, just like it was for me. Does this make sense? So what am I saying? I'm saying that let's go back in and look at our meetings, and if our meeting formats are weird and we've got too many discussion meetings, let's change those now. Let's start having more literature-based meetings and a few less discussion meetings that just encourage talking about the day. Let's start talking about hope. Let's start talking about the good stuff. People jamming me all the time. Chris, what do you think I ought to be, a stupid pep rally? Yeah. Guys, we've got one opportunity. The newcomer that just walked in this room, we've got one chance, and that's a chance to share some hope with him. Let's leave the therapy to the professionals, shall we? I've said it from the podium 1,000 times. What we need in our rooms is a few more spiritual mentors and a few less junior therapists. A few more spiritual mentors telling people how to have a spiritual experience. You cats that are sitting in this room that have had a relationship with God and have had the spiritual experience, you're the one that can explain it to the newcomer. I know you need some help with this relationship. Let a professional do that. This is one of the reasons that we don't have enough sponsors to go out there. A sponsor doesn't want to grab hold of these cats because they don't want to... Our job is not to fix the alcoholic. Can you all understand this? Our job is not to fix their life. As a sponsor, your job is to show them how to do the work. Hey, what's this? Tradition 5. One. Primary purpose. Carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. One. You don't have to be a counselor to be effective in this fellowship. What you have to be is an alcoholic. Can you get down with that? We need you young people in this fellowship. I'm going to say this. I've said it a million times. We need you women in this fellowship. Number one death rate in AA is the women because they will not stay. And I can't blame them. In some groups, it's ridiculous. I was talking to Patty the other day about it. You know, she goes back to her groups like this, and she's working with some women. And it's like a few women. Y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. You end up sponsoring everybody in the place. Why? Well, we're the newcomers. It's your turn to start sponsoring. I hear this crap until I want to just spit. Well, I can't sponsor anybody because I haven't been sober a year. Show me in the book where it says that. Well, we got to do this. Show me in the book. I hear it all the time. I get a newcomer coming out of my hospital. Buddy, go get involved in the fellowship. What I want to do, but they won't let me chair a meeting because I'm not sober a year. Excuse me? What? Who came up with that crap? You don't have to chair it by yourself. Why don't you sit down and let some of the old-timers get with you and y'all co-chair the meeting? That's how we learned to do this. One alcoholic. I didn't ask you to throw me to the sharks. I asked you to walk with me through the sharks. That's exactly what we do. Why don't we do that? Why don't we do that? Because we need everybody's help in the trenches. Everybody wants to look around at the other person. Well, he'll take care of it. Well, he'll take care of it. No, they're not. You've got to find a job in AA. What's your job? Everybody's on the same page. You've got to help your job. I'm going to say this. Some of you guys, Patty, we talked about it the other day. Our job is just to show up. Go to your next meeting and see what you can do to help. Is it make coffee? Go make coffee. Sweep? Go sweep. Carry a message back into the treatment center? Drive a bus? What's your job? Because we got too many people sitting on their butt. We got too many people not doing anything. And guess what they're doing? They're not staying sober. I got to tell you, some of you newcomers in here, you were old-timers at one time. What happened? Everybody for years, that's all we've done. We've looked the other way. Well, just keep coming back. Jesus, guys, in my groups in Kerrville and Hunt, when we meet, we just, at the end of a meeting, we don't say keep coming back. We say stay. Because that's exactly what we need you to do. We need you to stay. Aren't some of you tired of being a newcomer? I mean, really, for me, I'm 7 years around the fellowship. Aren't you sick of picking up chips, watching everybody feel sorry for you, look down? Why don't you stay? Why don't you take your place in the trench along with the rest of us? We need your help. We need your talents. You get a chance to work on this conference next year, go see Buffy. Volunteer. Get your ass in gear. Because that's exactly what this is about. Because if you don't find your job, you're not going to stay. I got to tell you, I'm honored to know every one of you. What a cool thing this is to be alive today, free of the obsession to drink, because of God's grace. Because of God's grace. And the one thing I do to say thank you, God, is to reach back out to that newcomer and see what I can do. You're not staying sober? You ain't doing the work. You're not being responsible. And y'all have been the best, and I appreciate y'all being here. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. You can go do